There's a lot to be said for entrepreneurship and life experience as well, because you do tend to put that life experience or reflect on it and then put it back into your company. And so there's two things I wanted to mention as well. One is, statistically, women or female founders who do get funded tend to deliver close to a three times higher return to their investors than their male counterparts.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3, and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate, and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
Today, we are very excited as we are joined by the wonderful Jackie Bloom. Jackie is an extraordinary entrepreneur with over 25 years experience starting, scaling businesses and helping others do the same. Jackie focuses her energy on ventures that are purpose-driven and is committed to making a difference in others' lives. Founding a business supporting female founders, she is on a mission to fund and support female-led talent to ensure they succeed. She believes we are stronger together, which is something Pam and I feel very passionate about as well. Jackie, amazing to have you here today. I'm very excited to get stuck into this podcast because, as I said before we kicked off, I've read some alarming stats and very keen to get your thoughts on it. But before we dig into that, do you want to start with just a little bit of introduction to yourself, you know, your journey into entrepreneurship, what got you excited about getting into this VC world and helping women get their businesses off the ground? So over to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you here today.
With pleasure. Good morning, ladies, and thank you so much for inviting me onto your fabulous Sisterhood podcast. Really excited to be here, and not just to share, you know, my perspective and journey, but also to hear a little bit about yours and hear a bit more about the Sisterhood Club as well, because I think it's really cool what you guys are doing or what you ladies are doing.
So do we.
So, a little bit of background about myself. I don't even want to say how long ago it was since I started in business, but I was very young. And I really grew up in a family business, a family environment, and vowed at the kitchen table to never be part of the family business. And lo and behold, sure enough, I was at university studying Bachelor of Business Management at the time, and Mum and Dad approached me and said, how about you join the company? And, well, you know, 30 years later, I can actually vouch and say I did it. And it's been a really, really interesting journey, particularly as a female in business. Back then, you know, in the late 90s and early 2000s, it was such an interesting process because I was really blessed to have been given the opportunity to learn every facet of the business. And, you know, when you're in a wholesale and retail company, importing and exporting, there are a lot of facets to learn. So I got to embrace things like administration, retail, wholesale, import and export. I ended up being the buyer, so I went on numerous buying trips overseas and got to see a lot of the world. And then eventually, and, you know, also in a marketing role, I did my post-grad while I was at as part of the family business as well. And what was interesting was I was very, very young to be managing not just a family company, but a company that traditionally held or had staff or a team who were mature age women. And so I had ethnic mature age women reporting to me, and I was, you know, probably more than half their age. So that was probably my biggest challenge in business early on, in terms of, you know, coming up against men in the fashion industry. It wasn't as much of a challenge as it was, I suppose, because I could get away with being young and being really cheeky. And that held me in good stead, whereas, you know, I have no doubt now being older, I wonder, you know, how much you could actually get away with in terms of being cheeky versus needing to be ruthless or, you know, really savvy. So that was a really interesting experience. And then moving along, you know, I had done a myriad of things in between. I very sadly lost my mum to cancer towards the end of my running of Bloom Fabrics, and that so I continued it for another 3 years, but it was really her baby. It was her passion project. And what I found, again, being young at the time, having a very young family as well, and then having just lost my mum, I really sat back and thought there's got to be more to life and more to this world than fashion. You know, as much as I still love it, there really, I just realised I wasn't fulfilling my passion or my purpose. And so I then went into palliative care, which was, you know, a very different journey. Started a business back then and realised that I, whilst it was really fulfilling from a career perspective, what was happening was the business that I had built was becoming much more of a care agency. And at that point in time, it wasn't what I wanted to, or wasn't what I was trying to establish. If I knew then what I've learnt now, you know, it would probably be a tremendously successful company had I have ridden the waves and actually really picked the low-hanging fruit versus going against the grain and saying, no, that's not what I'm trying to build, this is what I'm trying to build instead. And so, you know, with every single journey that I've taken, you learn a tremendous number of lessons. And the most important thing, I believe, is taking those lessons on board and being able to implement them into your next phase. And someone once said this recently, which I absolutely love, because a lot of women tend to look on their failures and really put themselves down for it. And rather than saying, oh, you know, I haven't been successful for numerous reasons, you can actually turn around and say, no, 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 what I'm doing is a career pirouette. Rather than, you know, I've failed at this, so I've got to move on to the next role. What am I doing and how am I doing it? You're actually doing a little dance. And you're just twirling and spinning around and you're taking, you know, you're moving forward on the stage, but you're just taking a different turn. And so I really love that euphemism of doing this pirouette, because I think it's so important to motivate ourselves and to embrace change versus put ourselves down for change.
Can I just say I absolutely love that career pivot. I have never heard that in my life before. No. I'm going to start using that over the word pivot.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, because pivot almost has a negative connotation where you go, uh-oh, I've got to stop and it's a knee-jerk reaction and now I've got to turn and pivot and do something else. Whereas your pirouette allows flow, and I think flow is so important, because you're not just again, the word, you allow yourself this beautiful dance. And that's what I've come to learn that life is all about. It's a dance. And you know, but had we have had this conversation yesterday, it would probably have been very different, because I did feel like I was hitting my head up against a brick wall yesterday, whereas today I'm dancing.
So, yes, I'm glad we've got you on a day that you're dancing.
Yes,
I think there is just there's just so much to unpack with everything you've just said there, Jackie. And I just want to say thank you for sharing about what happened with your mum, because you know, like, I think that was, I can imagine, a very challenging time for you, and that just knowing that perhaps it was her passion, not your passion, would have been a real sort of moment and a pirouette in your life where you sort of changed, you know. So I think that was really beautiful. For thank you for sharing that. And you've touched upon something very important there, just the way you said about, you know, yesterday you felt like you were banging your head against the wall and today you're feeling good again. And I think that that's business, right? That's just life. And I feel like, you know, in our society a little bit, we definitely tend to glamorize, you know, success and think that it's all going to be, you know, rainbows and sunshines every day. And if you don't wake up happy, then, you know, you're a negative person. That's just not true. I think, you know, that we need to really have these honest conversations. Not every day in business or every day in your life's going to be good. Some days it's going to be really freaking hard, and some days you're going to be sat there scratching your head going, what on earth am I doing? Like, there's easier jobs. Like, Pam and I multiple times say to each other, God, I wish I was sat on a salary today. You know, just like not having any of this stress of the employees or what's going on in the business. But at the end of the day, business can also be really, really fun. So I'd love to talk to you a bit about, you know, you've mentored a lot of women over your time, and you've probably seen a lot of businesses come and go. What does set people apart? I'm always fascinated to say, why is this business successful, or this and this business isn't, or why is this person really, you know, just going for it with all this enthusiasm, and this person gives up? Like, what does set people apart? I've always been fascinated in this whole mindset piece when it comes to entrepreneurship. So I'd love to really dive into that.
Oh, it's such a big topic that we could spend hours uncovering, I think.
Let's do it now.
and, you know, what's interesting is that you can have this conversation with 100 different people and you'll get 100 different answers. Mm-hmm. So I think I recently did some research, actually, for a presentation that I did on pitching and how women get very different results based on the pitch that they do to an investment community or an investment committee. And a lot of those results are actually because they're asked different questions during the process. And it's quite extraordinary. Historically and statistically, there is a natural gender bias. And my understanding and my belief is that that natural gender bias comes from the difference between nurture versus nature. And this gets, you know, goes way back. I often refer to human society, if you think about caveman days, where the man's natural instinct and natural physiological being was to go out and be the hunter-gatherer, and the female was to maintain the home and to nurture the children and to, you know, protect the home whilst the male went out to hunt and gather. And I think if we bring that into today's society, the difficulty that we have is when the conversations come up around equality, non-gender bias, and how do we bring in diversification and equal pay and all of those things, which, and I actually think equal pay is a very different conversation to equality in the workforce, just that's my own opinion. But I can naturally see how that has progressed in terms of where we started from as cavemen and where we are now, or as cave people and where we are now. We are fundamentally, physiologically still built the same way, right? So men are still full of progesterone and testosterone, and they are still the hunter-gatherer, and the female is naturally still the nurturer. And there's no, you know, there are lots of people who don't agree with that opinion, and that's okay. It's just, you know, if I really think about it and I think back to when my children were really, really young playing with a doll's house, and I've got two boys, right, and they were playing with their, we were at their cousin's house and they were playing with the doll's house, and I was watching how they were interacting with that play. And there's their little cousin Jess, and she's sitting at the doll's house and she's playing with the dolls inside the home, and she's putting the doll to bed and she's giving it dinner or breakfast or whatever she was doing, but she was playing with the doll in the house. My boys had their dolls, whether they were superheroes or whatever dolls they actually had. And this particular doll happened to be catapulting off the roof of the house. Right? But no adult was sitting there going, boys, this is how you need to be playing with this doll versus how Jess should be playing with hers. There is something inherently innate in how we respond physically and emotionally. Mm-hmm. So I believe that that categorically has transpired into the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not necessarily, as I said, I don't necessarily believe there's a right or a wrong to that, other than I do think we need to give it more credit in terms of this is how it has occurred. Mm-hmm. Where I do see the biases come in that I don't agree with is where we have fundamentally put women behind and put ourselves down, mm-hmm. Both from men and women, because we haven't agreed with the way women might do their work or perhaps lead a team with empathy versus aggression, and they're all the things that we're now having to reverse, and come back in time and actually make changes to. And I think that's one of the biggest issues that we're all facing.
Yeah, 100%. I've never really thought about that before, but you have really made some really good points there. And I think that if I reflect on the type of woman that I am personally, I would say I have a lot more masculine in me. And I've reflected on this myself because I grew up in a household watching my dad, who was the one that went out and worked and was the one that had his own business. And I taught myself from a young age that to get ahead and to be successful, I think I had to be masculine. I had to hold my own. I had to be powerful. I had to be assertive. I had to speak up. That's kind of what I believe I absorbed from a very young age, which is why I am probably more masculine in my leadership, and Pam's definitely more nurturing. It's why I don't have children and Pam does. But I think that we're probably in a society now where there is a bit more of a spectrum, and there's some women that are very clear that they want to start their own businesses, they want to be in leadership roles, and they have a different approach. And there's other women that I guess more traditional, and they're more nurturing and more, you know, of that sort of those softer skills. And I think that what I'm seeing now is that women are sort of like really becoming very individual in their approaches. And I guess there's no right or wrong, but for me, I guess my journey has been almost leaning more towards my feminine and learning to actually be more empathetic, because it's not something that's come naturally to me, because it's not something that I watched from a young age. It's something that I thought, I want to have my business and therefore this is what I need to do to get ahead and to stand out. And, you know, I remember my dad saying to me, you know, like, if you want to be a strong female and you want to get ahead, like, this is kind of what you need to do. You know, you need to use your voice and stand up and be confident. And that was kind of drummed into me. So I think what you've just said there is just, I've not thought about that way before, because it's probably not something that I've really given much thought to, because naturally I have just been more in my masculine, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think that that's necessarily right either. And I think this, and I've gone wrong in a lot of ways, because I've worked myself into burnout almost trying to get ahead. And this is another thing, problem in our society, is that, you know, we're in this hustle culture, and I think that we need to be more in a case of like listening and tapping into our own intuition, which is in our feminine. Mm. So everything you just said there is perfect. And what are your thoughts on that? Because, like, you know, do you think that women, you know, can get ahead being in their feminine, being nurturers, being more empathetic? Or do you think that as women, we need to go into these boardroom meetings and be a bit more assertive? Like, where are women falling down? Why aren't we getting the funding that men are? What is going on? Like, only, I read a stat today that only 5% of VC money went to women startups. So what is going on? Is it a bias? Is it a lack of confidence? You know, what are you seeing?
Yeah. Now you've said a couple of questions that we could really unpack. There's a couple of things that I want to answer from that perspective. And firstly, if we go back to masculine versus feminine and that energy, the biggest lessons that I learnt from my divorce was that I think what a lot of women don't necessarily understand or realise is that being that home person or doing the washing or doing the shopping or doing all the things traditionally that women did is actually being in our masculine. So when you're in your masculine, it's a doing versus when you're in your feminine, you're allowing and you're receiving. So anytime we're in our masculine, and I do believe this is what happens, is that a lot of women tend to overdo the masculine. And then what happens is the male in their lives become emasculated. And when they become, and this is going to turn into a relationship podcast, but when you emasculate a man, when you emasculate a man, if you've, I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but upon reflection, what happens is he spends more time at work because that's where he feels most needed and wanted versus spending more time at home, because the female is doing everything at home because she's always complaining that he's always at work. But there's a reason for it. And I don't think enough women actually recognize that. And I, as I said, it took me years after my divorce to unpack and understand what had happened in my marriage, because I didn't understand it. And my ex-husband could not articulate to me what I had done wrong. And I kept, because, you know, our marriage ended because he was no longer in love with me, but I didn't know why. And I'm like, but what's changed? How has this changed? I don't understand why. And I did become resentful because he was constantly at work. But I didn't understand why he was constantly at work. He thought it was because he was naturally providing. So over the years, when I spent the time working on myself and really going deep into, okay, well, what is it that has created this? How do I feel when I'm wearing a pair of pants versus wearing a skirt? Do I feel feminine? And then how do I feel feminine wearing a pair of pants? Right? And I know that's really deep, and some women won't necessarily understand that at all, and that's okay. Right? That's okay. But it is a journey, and we all uncover it in our own time. But what I really did learn was that I totally emasculated him by doing, always doing the washing, always doing everything to do with the house and the kids, so that all he had to do was come home and be present. And he, yeah, where, and because I traditionally was brought up in that environment where my mum did the same for my dad, I thought that was the right thing to do. But in actual fact, I think and believe these days, if you have a shared, a household where duties are shared, where the doing things are shared a lot more, you probably end up with a much happier relationship, because you're both in the giving and receiving. And I think that's really important to know if you are giving and receiving. So that's one thing in terms of the masculine versus the feminine. So can we constantly be in our masculine? The answer to me is no, because I believe we lose our inner goddess. We really, we squash her. We don't let her come out and play. And again, that's something I've learned over time, is that we have to allow her to come out and play, and it's okay to sit back and allow ourselves to receive. But how hard is it? Because I think we have all these expectations now that we have to run a household, we have to, you know, manage the kids, and we have to work. A, because half of us can't afford not to, not to have two incomes when we have children. But B, because it's almost become an expectation from society.
Yeah.
And I think, sadly, as much as I think social media has, you know, has its place and has some great benefits, I also believe that it causes more harm than good. It has created an absolute monster in our children, in their perspectives, in our own perspectives, even as adults. So going back to that was a really long-winded answer, and I haven't. And so the second part of that is entrepreneurs and the bias in female founders. So 2.3% of venture capital globally is deployed to female founders. And that stat
say that again, because that was insane. 2.3%.
2.3%. Prior to COVID, it was 4%. And then during COVID, it fell to 2.3%. And so, exactly. Wow. And we really need to question why. And there's so much, again, that we can unpack over that. But traditionally, the stats tell us, A, that women don't go out first and foremost and try and raise comparatively to men. And I do sadly think that's got a lot to do with self-worth and self-belief. B, those who do go out and raise or try and raise, unfortunately, are very much up against majority of the investment committee being men. And the reason the majority of the investment, I think that the stat there is 14% of females sit in leadership roles within a venture capital firm. So what we actually need to do is change that statistic in order to change the funding. And the reason for that is because there's a couple of reasons, in my opinion. Again, this is just my opinion, and there will be lots of people who might beg to differ, and I'm open to other opinions as well. You know, this is just my thoughts. But one of those reasons is because women, traditionally in the startups that women are working on and the problems they're trying to solve, are problems that men haven't necessarily come up against, right? So they're solving these huge problems. But as a male, you go, well, I don't really understand what you're trying to solve, so therefore I'm not going to back the startup, which is really, really interesting. And traditionally women are coming up with these ideas in order to solve this bias as well. You know, it's to be able to help women educate her children from home, or it might be to help with after-school activities, or it might be a new calendar app that integrates 16,000 calendars because that's what we're expected to do these days. You know, whereas a man wouldn't, so many men turn around and go, oh, I've never thought about that before. And you go, yeah, well, but that's because you've never had to, because the expectation, society's expectation on men is different to the expectation it has on women. And that is first and foremost where it comes from. Then it's the expectation that we put on ourselves and how we're brought up. So from that, it stems back, in my opinion, down to education. But the education has to start in primary school. And I wish that there had been more entrepreneurial education, A, in my time, but B, for my children, and they're not even that old. You know, they're late teens now, but as young kids, I wish we had have done more things around design thinking and, you know, you can be whatever you want to be. And I still have those conversations with them, but it is very much tainted by what society now establishes over social media.
Absolutely, and I think it's really important what you've said there in terms of that stat about the percentage of females that are actually on the boards at VC companies. And really interestingly, we've actually got an amazing female of our advisory board for Sisterhood Club, Liza Boston, and she's a female VC, has been for many years. and she would agree with you. Mm. The problem is that men don't even realise that they have these unconscious biases. Yeah. You know, there's men that would sit on the board and she hears them sitting on the table going, I've got three daughters and my wife and I'm fully supportive. And then she physically sees them in the room making these decisions on who to make the investments in. And she says the biases that come out, but they are so unconscious of what they're actually saying, and that they do have these deeply ingrained biases that are so, that, you know, come from society. I mean, the way they've grown up and the decade that they've grown up in, right? So it's such a complex issue, and it's a case of, we know that in order for change that, we do need more females in these positions, you know, and how do we absolutely get there? And but the whole masculine feminine thing as well, you know, you're so right. It's deeply ingrained, and we, Georgie and I, actually have a tech recruitment firm as well, and actually speak with a lot of female leaders and females in business, and sometimes I sort of see women acting in a way in business that I feel is not really true to themselves. And I think it's a really important dialogue to get out there to female leaders that it is okay to allow empathy, emotion, compassion, all these feminine type traits to emerge in the workplace, right? Mm-hmm. Because that can actually have a really positive impact in the direction of a business. You know, we need more women that have got a seat at the table in the senior leadership tables, because we do bring a different dynamic and a beautiful dynamic at that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting in terms of the way that women show up to even pitch their ideas. And I think that, to just very gently touch upon the education piece, what is actually taught in schools has got to change and evolve. I've got two daughters myself, and I would love for them to be taught about personal development, you know, and, you know, having courage and, you know, having self-belief and, you know, how to be assertive. Because we often see, you know, we've been to a couple of nights recently and we have watched the differences in behaviours of women pitching and men pitching their products or their business ideas. And it is night and day. You can almost see some of the females, they're holding back, almost looking for that reassurance, like, you're doing well, keep going. We're at a pitch night recently and a woman, great business idea, but completely controlled the pitch, and she just got a complete blank, whereas we noticed the men get up and they just have got self-belief in abundance. I'm not saying that that's always the way, but it's genuinely been something that we've noticed recently. So again, with Sisterhood Club, we've got a sisterhood school, access the education piece behind that. We want to teach certain things to adults, which should be taught from a young age, but unfortunately it isn't. You know, it falls on the parents.
I wanted to lean in on what you just said about confidence, because that is fundamentally one of the reasons why, as well, why women don't get funded as much. Because ultimately, particularly in early stage startups, the number one thing that an investment committee will look for, or someone watching a pitch, is actually the founder. And so unless you have complete conviction and passion for what you are doing and how you get that across, you will find it more difficult to get that funding. And it's really flawed the way we pitch, because, you know, we go to these pitch nights and we give them our 60-second or 5-minute elevator pitch, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Yet most investors will tell you they won't invest straight away. They won't invest. They won't put their money in on day one, and they want to build a relationship with you. So how do they build a relationship with you if they've based it on a 30-second or a 1-minute pitch? How do they get to understand who you are and your passion behind what you're trying to build? So I think there's fundamentally a flaw right there in terms of, let's go to a pitch night, but let's go and invest $5 million in your company and make that decision over 2 years. So there's a real disconnect there. But the other thing that you brought up in terms of men are more confident than women, again, if we look at the fundamentals of how that happens, that is very much based on A, upbringing, B, education, and C, what are we made up of? You know, is it because there is a bit more testosterone in there, and because of that testosterone, there's a bit more ego,
Mm-hmm.
And that ego gives them the encouragement to be able to have that confidence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, again, there's no right or wrong here,
mm-hmm.
but if we look really fundamentally behind that, why are men so much more confident than women in yeah. some instances? I mean, it's mm-hmm. not. It's
a very interesting everyone. Perspective. Yeah.
I know loads of confident women and certainly more confident women than men. But is that a reason that do we need to look at that? Do we need to question that and therefore revisit how we listen to pitches or how we integrate that?
Yeah. When we were at our last pitch night, we were like, it's not a natural way for people to present their business ideas to have 60 seconds or a couple of minutes on a floor in front of a room full of people. That's not natural. It's not how you're going to get the best out of people. So, like, out of interest, in what way do you feel that we could get women to pitch business ideas that would encourage them to show up as the best versions of themselves in a safe space where they're actually able to thrive?
Yeah, I think it's more about, I personally think a lot of women, and certainly the ones that I've mentored and worked with to date, are looking for that safe space and community where they can connect. They can connect with like-minded entrepreneurs. They can connect with women who are, you know, working on the world's to-do list, but also who get the entrepreneurial journey. And they don't want to stand up there in front of 100 people pitching their idea. If you've never mm-hmm. been brought up to be, a public speaker, or if you're not the person who's necessarily confident to go and do that, but you're much more confident in a one-on-one surrounding, then mm-hmm. for me the ideal scenario is find a community where you can go and do that. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of them out there. But when we are on that entrepreneurial journey, we don't necessarily look for them. We look for pitch nights mm-hmm. and we look for, accelerators, but an accelerator isn't necessarily always the answer. It could be that you're just wanting a community that you can be part of. So, for instance, mm-hmm. there's One Roof for Women, and that's an online community mm-hmm. that is amazing. There's the Sisterhood Club, mm-hmm. that you guys are creating. We naturally say that you guys, that you ladies are creating.
Yeah, ladies. I don't want to say that all the time, actually.
Absolutely. Ladies are creating. There's, Atto, which is an accelerator, but that's okay. It's finding your tribe, because women need their tribe. That's how we do things in life.
Yeah, 100% exactly. Pam and I, when we first came up with the Sisterhood, we both got so excited about it because we've seen firsthand that women have gone to start their businesses, then lost funding, had to go back to get a job, or just don't have the confidence, don't have the self-belief. I think that what you sometimes need is a little bit someone going, you've got this,
mm-hmm.
you have got this, I believe in you, how can we help, who can we introduce you? Sometimes that's all it takes, just an introduction.
Yep.
That's sometimes all you need. Just one person just open the door, or one person just to say, to highlight your business and your mission. Sometimes we are literally one introduction away from business taking off. And that excites me, right? But again, it's the whole networking, and knowing your worth and then putting yourself out there. And all of that, again, is confidence, believing in yourself. I think that is the core issue. And you're so right. It all starts from that primary school level. And, I was shopping for Pam's daughter the other day. It was her birthday. And I'm going into these toy shops and it's like girls are being sold ironing boards and cooking. I'm thinking, hang on a second. And I go to the building blocks and, computer games. I'm thinking, what do we teach the young generation? Well, we need to really be aware that these messages start from the womb. Mm-hmm. Right, as soon as they come out, women are at advantage. But as parents, and I know Pam takes this very seriously, as mentors to younger girls, which I like to think I am, we need to also lead by example. We need to be the ones using our voices, and we cannot be what we cannot see. And I think that this is what we need to do now. We need to all help each other rise. We need to all help create a safe space for women to use their voices. It's why we started this podcast. We need to listen to strong women, women that are doing incredible things, because it shines a light into what's possible. And that's what we need to see, because there's plenty of room at the top. But let's help everyone get there, because we need more seats at the table. That's so, so important, because I think we can all agree that there's, you know, too many men perhaps in positions of power, and it's probably why we're in a lot of these situations that we're in now, is because we're not dealing with empathy, not thinking about Mother Earth, we're not thinking about all these issues that society's facing. And if we don't change it, we're, you know, we're not creating a very good future for anyone. So this is why Pam and I are very passionate about female empowerment.
Yeah.
And I think, look, we do have a long way to go, but that what my mantra is, we can't do it alone, but we can certainly do it together. And so the more of us who can come along and do it together with amazing men, there are so many amazing men out there who want to be a part of it. They want to help, you know. And so where I get a little bit frustrated is when there are these women's groups and empowerment groups, but they actually become or are extremist groups. And so it's women for women and women for women and women for women. But you can't have that. We only make up 50% of the population. You have to have the feminine and the masculine energy to be in flow. So without that masculine energy, all we end up doing is hitting our heads against a brick wall. And you end up with this, you know, feminine versus feminine energy that just becomes toxic, in my opinion. And, you know, it's really difficult. How do we, I like to say, we can't solve discrimination. We're never going to solve discrimination with discrimination. Why should we discriminate against men? And why should I? I'm a mother of two boys. Why should I be on this rampage of women for women? What am I teaching them?
It's how you educate your boys as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, and you know how boys are brought up in order to respect women, value their opinions, how they listen to women, because ultimately we do express things differently. And you know, it's a very, very complex issue, but I think the education around, you know, trying to change the dialogue of how we speak to our children that are identified girls, you know, how we encourage them to grow up and how we educate them and encourage them to be more confident is equally as important to make sure that we're having an open dialogue with our boys and the sons and how we nurture them. But it's just, it's such an important conversation as well. And, you know, I have some incredible men in my life as well, and I think that you're right. Some of the female leaders can become, you know, the balance sort of tips over. But I would not be able to show up the way that I show up on a day-to-day basis. I would not be able to do what I have done. I would not be able to achieve what I've achieved without the support of my husband. And we very much do have an equal footing in the house, which we didn't have for a long time. This has been sort of something that's, you know, progressively evolved. We've grown with each other. But, you know, we very much do have, like, our roles in the household. And it's... his support has absolutely enabled me to thrive in my career and go away and spend some time nurturing our first business, now Sisterhood Club as well. So it is really important to have that tribe. That tribe can be made up with so many different people. So I think it's important, you know, we have got a business called Sisterhood Club, but we very much, Sisterhood Club would also not be what it is today without the support of Kyle, who plays a very huge role in the business as well. And if we can just touch upon ego, I think that that is something that's incredibly important. And again, how we speak to young girls. So for example, my mum is an incredible woman. She is one of the, I couldn't ask for a better mother. However, she was born in the 1950s. Her and my dad have had a very, very traditional marriage. My dad did work. My mum was at home.
And she wore an apron, right? And had the roast chicken.
Absolutely.
Had the roast chicken ready for dinner when he walked in the door and the beer, right?
Yeah. My mum ended up in hospital one time, and my dad did not know how to turn the oven or turn on the washing machine. My mum was affronted, so because he took the washing into the next door neighbour, so there was a whole education piece that went on in our household after that, I tell you. But you know, mum, if I actually think back, like, I am a very, I would class myself as assertive and confident, Georgie.
No, absolutely. Yep.
But I absolutely do not enjoy being the centre of attention. Now, put me in a round table or have me in a discussion, I can absolutely hold my own. The thought of doing a keynote speech terrifies the living daylights of me. And I find that really interesting. But if I sort of unpack some of the messaging that I actually had coming through from my childhood, Pamela, don't get too big for your boots. You know, don't forget where you've come from. Oh, don't be too outspoken about that, Pamela. Come on, you know. Those sort of messages, and it is interesting, you know, that stemmed from my mum's era, and that was the 1950s. She was born in 1952. And that sort of trickled through. And I think, is that the reason why I sometimes hold back on sharing what my own honest opinion is? Because I don't want to be too much like that. And it's almost like, as a female, has it been ingrained in me? Don't be egotistical, Pamela. Don't let that through, you know, keep that at bay. You know, so it's interesting the message that comes through. And that's something that I've only really recently unpacked, and I'm 37 years old now. And I'm thinking, it's not only have your own daughters that you really start to unpack your own childhood as well. Yep. Whereas would that be the messaging that would be taught had I been a son? You know, so I love some of the things that you touched upon, Jackie, because I think it all does stem back to our childhood.
It absolutely does. And, you know, even, like I said, if I look at my marriage, I know that a lot of both of our behaviours stemmed from our upbringing. And when you're in the marriage and you're young and you're carefree and you before children and all of those things, you don't necessarily think about that. So there's a lot to be said for entrepreneurship and life experience as well, because you do tend to put that life experience or reflect on it and then put it back into your company. And so there's two things I wanted to mention as well. One is, statistically, women or female founders who do get funded tend to deliver close to a three times higher return to their investors than their male counterparts. And so we have to question why that is again. And one of those reasons, I do believe, is because we do lead with empathy and we nurture. Not all of us do, but, you know, we tend to naturally nurture over ego. And then the other thing that I wanted to say was with funding, there is, and this is, again, it's frustrating because I've had conversations with VCs and I understand this point of view, but their perspective is, well, if you can't get out there and shine amongst all these other pitches, if you can't have a conversation publicly, if you can't spruik your company with passion and self-belief and confidence, then how are you going to lead this company?
Interesting.
And I used to agree with it, and I used to say, yeah, okay, fair enough, I understand that. But since then, I've also come to realise that being a great leader doesn't have to be or have to mean being a complete extrovert. You can be an incredible leader and not be extroverted, right? Mm-hmm. You can lead empathetically, you can lead with beauty and grace, and you know, I think Brené Brown is a brilliant example of that. She is the first person in this on earth to turn around and say, I'm not extroverted. In fact, I'm terrified of being an extrovert. I'm an introvert. But look at the way she leads. Yes, she can public speak, and now she can. But you don't have to be an extrovert to be an amazing leader. And therefore, you also don't need to be an extrovert or a public speaker, or you shouldn't have to be, to get funding. And that, I do think, is a fundamental flaw in the way we look at investment.
100%. Jackie, I could sit here and talk to you all day because I just feel like we just touch upon so many important topics in our society today. And I feel like we've really hopefully given all of our amazing listeners a lot of things to just think, just sit with and ponder. And maybe sort of really reflect upon and think, you know, where do my beliefs come from? Why aren't I, you know, that confident? Why do I believe in myself? Like, what is going on? And how can I overcome this? So hopefully there's a lot of takeaways in this conversation. I know I always come away from these types of conversations really reflecting on my own upbringing and my beliefs and things. So I just want to thank you for your time today. And I know that our listeners get so much value out of today's episode. But for anyone that's listening to this now, to find out more about yourself and any mentorship and business advice, where should you send them?
Yeah, absolutely. Hit me up on LinkedIn. Come and find me on LinkedIn. It's just Jackie Bloom, JACQUIBLOOM. More than happy to help wherever I can. My passion is to have impact wherever I can. So if I can help in some way through my network or community, then more than happy to help.
Thank you so much for today, Jackie. And thank you for everyone listening. Have a nice day wherever you are. And we'll speak to you again soon. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.